is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Henry Sokolsky, the guru, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Education Center. A headline in Reuters requires explication. IAEA probing Ukraine report that missile flew over a nuclear power plant. Lee Graf, the director general of the IAEA, the nuclear violation watchdog at the UN, said Kyiv had formally told him and IAEA that the missile flew over the South Ukraine plant on April 16th. The facility is near the town of Yasnukhrainsk, 350 kilometers south of Kyiv. Said the director, had such a missile gone astray, it could have had a severe impact on the physical integrity of the plant, potentially leading to a nuclear accident. I stop there because, Henry, a very good day to you. You've provided me a map of the world's reactors, and it is impressive how much has been built in the years since the Eisenhower administration, when nuclear energy was seen as the future, and perhaps it is the future. But right now, when you convert nuclear energy plants into concerns about war fighting, we have a war in Europe. That was not supposed to happen again, not only in our lifetimes, but ever. So we turn to a war in Asia. We turn to the possibility of a war in the Middle East. We turn to the possibility of a missile strike on the United States. To your understanding, are any of these plants, some in the U.S. are 40 years old or older, the plant in Switzerland is 51 years old, the plants in Asia tend to be younger, but still, are any of them adequately prepared for a missile strike such as Mr. Grassi, Senor Grassi, speaks of in Ukraine? Good day to you, Henry.
Good day to you. One-word answer, no.
Because that is true, we need to explore what can go wrong and why. The NPEC provides me this scenario. It is 2025. North Korean troops exchange small arms fire, as they recently did, at the DMZ. A newly elected conservative South Korean government, which is right now in place, is less quick to dismiss the shots as accidents, as one ROK serviceman is killed and another wounded. Washington, to show solidarity, this is a piece of fiction, but it's entirely credible, to deter North Korean provocations, flies deterrence B-2 sorties from bases in the U.S. into the North's declared air defense zones. The crisis tumbles down the stairs, as we see in Ukraine. Henry, the plants that I see on this map are dotting the South Korean terrain. What happens next in your scenario? Good evening to you.
Well, there's an exchange tit for tat, and they're is an effort to threaten things in the North, and the North decides, okay, let's show them what we can do to stand them down. And they go after the plants that are in South Korea, which are quite large in number, particularly in the South portion of South Korea. And you know, depending on what time of year it is, the plume of radiation that would issue would either go over to Japan and hit locally around where, you know, in South Korea, or go up the peninsula. And in any case, there would be massive movements of people, South Koreans, to get away from all of this. It'd be a really quite a bad day. The amount of radiation would be a function of what they chose to hit. They could hit the plant and induce or any number of other features of the plant to induce a loss of coolant accident that would release, you know, radiation if the containment building was broken. Or they could go after the spent fuel ponds, which would produce radiation laydowns, arguably, according to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, you know, roughly 20 times what we saw at Fukushima. Or more likely, the prospect of all this might be such that they wouldn't have to do any of this. They would just lob a missile into the parking lot, knock out maybe the chief operating engineer's car, and everyone would freak out and get on the road, shut down the plants, and clog up the freeways. I mean, all of this can be played like a fiddle now, because the accuracy of the missiles that most countries have, including North Korea, is so great. They can pick what kind of effect they want to have. And so it could range all the way to near Chernobyl down to no one's hurt, but the plant shut down and everyone's on the road freaking out.
We had a similar presentation when a missile struck near a plant in Ukraine. Zaporizhia is my memory of the plant. And it did not strike the containment building. It did not strike the part of the building that runs the power to keep the water circulating. It struck, I think, near an outbuilding. It was said to be not grave risk, but there were several hours in which we didn't know that. That was an example of no one aiming at the containment building. It might not have been aiming at the facility. There was speculation that Russia, this was the days of the siege on Kyiv, was looking to cut the electric generation for eastern Ukraine. It turned out the assumption is that it was just an errant missile. So we're looking at something that's already happened. And we're talking about Korea, where these plants are populated more densely than anywhere else except for the east coast of the United States, as far as I can see. Does Korea concern itself with this, given the standoff with North Korea and the constant provocations of better and better missiles from North Korea?
Yes, they do. You don't read about it much, but if you know Korean and you can get a decent translator, they have been mulling over this prospect for at least 5 years or more. They had a study discussed and debated in their parliament about this. They think about it plenty, and they're not alone. I think that the Japanese have looked at the Ukraine crisis and had the prime minister, no less, on the floor of the parliament talking publicly about the need for special military assignments to protect each plant. And then the opposition called for missile defense units to be set up, because whether they knew it or not, that has been done by the Belarusians, who've had missile defense units at their reactor plant since 2019. So it's not like people have not thought about this. It's just some folks are very complacent about
it. Let's come to Europe, because the landscape around Paris, the landscape around Berlin, are dotted with older nuclear reactors. Germany has an intention of deactivating its nuclear power plants by 2022. That's right now. And to my knowledge, they have other problems now. Rather than going off the grid, they need to keep as much power on the grid as possible. Paris has no plans. Have either of those significant members of NATO speculated about what if, given the example of Ukraine that I illustrated?
Well, I don't know what the French or Germans have done since the war in Ukraine, but the Germans have been very keen about taking at least the spent fuel out of their reactors and putting them in very hardy stainless steel concrete casks, which would make for pretty hard targets. So, you got to hope that they take all of the spent fuel quickly out of those reactors that still are operating or just recently been shut down. The French, I don't know what they're doing now, but, right after 9/11, they did put air defenses around one of their larger fuel processing plants at Le Hague. And so you get the impression that people do think about this, at least overseas. I can't say that we do enough thinking about it, particularly given that we have troops that are stationed within radiation reach, if you will, from an accident or a strike from one of these plants overseas. And I have not found in my inquiries of the Energy and Defense Department who is responsible for preparing us for this prospect.
Let me give an anecdote from the late Cold War. I was traveling in Germany in 1985, just as Gorbachev came in. And at the time, the Soviet Union was seen as totally opaque, but armed, well armed with strategic nuclear weapons, and also capable of overrunning what NATO forces were deployed, coming from East Germany into West Germany. And taking the train out of Munich, I passed what was clearly a nuclear facility right in the middle of a residential neighborhood by the train tracks. I was headed to Schweinfurt. And I thought at the time, fancifully, I was a young person. I didn't have an education about how the masters of NATO were thinking. They wouldn't have to do more than put a missile into that nuclear reactor, and everything around here would be damaged for decades. And our forces, our armor unit, where I was going to visit, would not be able to get past this redoubt here in Munich, that that part of Germany, the heavily populated part of Germany, would be at risk for decades, ending any hope of recovery from, even if there was a recovery from, a conflict. Now, that was the 1980s, and we had all kinds of threats around us. Did we get complacent because the Cold War ended? We didn't worry about it then. Germany didn't worry about it. And so we've borrowed that not worrying about it, Henry, despite the logic of everything you presented.
Well, I always like to say you never get extra points for being right, although I, hesitate to say I'm right, because that's when you make mistakes, when you think you are. But no, I think it's in the too hard category. And once these things go up, you kind of grandfather the risk into your calculations, is my guess. But we have choices. We're about to export more reactors. Or at least we claim we are. Who knows if we're really going to deliver? We have a hard time just getting them built in the United States. But we're talking about building them in Jordan. We're talking about building them in Romania and Poland.
All right, let's talk about that when we come back. Because what can go wrong, and why we've now explicated what is to be done is ahead of us. And Henry's saying we're going to complicate the what is to be done. Henry Sokolsky, the Executive Director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. We're discussing a what if that we just saw happen in Ukraine, but it didn't go all the way to catastrophe. The next errant missile might hit the mark. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.